Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 28th of May. Sun's out and it's a nice long bank holiday weekend here. What a week we've had, Kev. Visiting various sites, enjoying some time on the road. How are you feeling now you're back over there?
Yeah, I'm barely alive still. I got in at 3 a.m. last night.
Long week, wasn't it, really? Even though it was only sort of 3 days on the road, it's surprising how it takes out travel.
A lot of travelling and... Yeah, it was a bit stressful getting to Heathrow yesterday, but I went through, got my ticket, got through security in less than 15 minutes in Heathrow Airport last night, which was unbelievable. I thought I was dreaming, actually, to be honest with you. It was like, walked up, got my ticket, put my bag in, and it's all self-service now. It was bizarre. It didn't have anything to do with the human being, basically, until the security. And then I was through, and I had an hour. I had to wait to find out which gate it was.
Were you delayed a bit? You were a little bit delayed, weren't you?
And then I was delayed an hour. And then, yeah, got in, taxi driver picked me up, and he went the wrong way. So that was all good fun. So instead of taking 20 minutes, it took 40 minutes, and I got back here at 3:15. So, yeah, right, all good.
Good. Well, let's have a look at some of the news this week. We've had the sad passing of Tina Turner. Sad life, it looks like. Unloved by her parents, abused by long-term husband Ike. Moved to Zurich, where she found a love. What do you make of that news?
Yeah, it's very sad, but she was an old lady, wasn't she, really, by the time it came about, so yeah. But she didn't have a nice life, did she?
No.
Even though she had money and fame, she didn't have a nice life.
Yeah, I think she was born in Nutbush, wasn't she, hence the song Nutbush City Limits and everything, and she fell in love with Ike at quite an early age and went through a pretty tumultuous relationship with him, but I think she found a love, as I say, in, she moved to Zurich and she married, I think it was a tour manager she met in Germany or something, and effectively she moved there and a little bit of ill health, but she finally found a love. So some amazing songs when you think back at her, you know, music catalogue. She was a real powerhouse and such a strong voice, wasn't she? So, very sad life. What about an article I picked up in the newspaper yesterday? Was this was quite interesting. UK population set to overtake France for the first time on record. Britain is on course to become Europe's second largest population for the first time on record. Net migration, it's a new high of 606,000, driven by students and the families, people fleeing the Ukraine and Hong Kong, and higher skilled workers from outside the EU. UK has 67 million inhabitants, France 67.7, and Germany 83 million. I mean, do you think it's already creaking under the strain? I mean, it seems no one wants to work. We were saying this week that it seems a lot of things are broken, isn't it? You know, you've got IT problems, you've got people, how many people on strikes? You've got nurses, you've got junior doctors, you've got passport control, security, you know, all the agents. It seems like it's creaking under the strain already, right?
Yeah, we need more workers. It's not creaking under the strain because there's too many people here or too many people in the UK. They need more workers. And this is part of the Brexit problem, I think, is that a lot of low-paid workers have left.
Yeah.
So now who does those jobs, you know? You can see it compared to the, you know, other countries. You know, you've got maybe one person on reception instead of three. You've got, you know, in a hotel, you've got one person serving the drinks instead.
And quite often you go there and there's no one at the bar or there's no one at the reception and you wait in 10 minutes thinking, is there anyone around? You know, ring the bell, the old sort of Fawlty Towers thing, you know, it's almost bizarre. Yeah. Almost like people don't want to do the hospitality thing. Is it a case of, you know, with the whole Brexit thing, have we shot ourselves in the foot of lower paid migrant workers that are not coming in, that have potentially maybe had to move back into Europe, that we're not employing? You know, do the UK, you know, do Brits want to do this sort of work? I don't know what it is. Has COVID created a malaise and a laziness of people not wanting to go back to work?
Yes.
Yeah, I think is the answer. Here's a question for you, Kev. Do you know what the world's biggest investment fund is? Think about it. The world's biggest investment fund.
I would guess it's either Qatari National Fund, the Saudi National Fund, or the Norwegian National Fund.
Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund, mate. Well done. It holds $1.4 trillion in total assets. And it announced on Friday that it would back calls for the US oil companies to set more aggressive emission reduction targets. Said it would support motions proposed by climate activist group Follow This at the company's annual shareholder meeting next Wednesday. ExxonMobil and Chevron have urged shareholders to reject them, obviously. But I mean, the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund is formerly known as the Government Pension Fund Global. It's a fund, as you know, into which the surplus wealth produced by Norwegian petroleum income is deposited. Changed its name, I think, in 2006 from that petroleum fund. But do you know, I always thought the Norwegians benefited from cash, but do you know how they actually do it indirectly?
No, probably just services, no?
Yeah, exactly. A portion of funds used to finance public expenses, so welfare services, infrastructure, government spending, and it contributes to the overall welfare of the country's citizens. But I mean, the population of Norway is something like 5.3 million, and the size of the country is 1.3 times bigger than the UK. I mean, it's just frightening how much space there is there, isn't it? And just back to the original article of just how cramped an island we're becoming.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole thing behind the Norwegians is they're in a situation where they are incredibly financially prudent. In that wealth fund, they stopped investing in oil and gas a few years ago, I think, or certain parts of the oil and gas. They said they would reduce the amount that they were going to be invested in. But it's a very, very, very asset resource rich place. Do you know anybody who might be finding any of those?
Well, I think that, I mean, yeah, you mentioned that, didn't you? They started globally in nickel production. They were actually the first large-scale production began in 1848, so they've certainly got a history of it. But I think that segues nicely to say into this week's spotlight company, who is Kendrick Resources, a mineral exploration and development company with vanadium, nickel, and copper projects in Scandinavia. We welcome Colin Bird, Martin Churchhouse, and Nadine Backer. Welcome all.
Welcome. Hello, nice to talk to you.
Hi, guys.
How are things since we've last talked?
Well, I think that really we should go back to the point of listing, that when we listed, we inherited a huge database, and both on vanadium, nickel, and other projects for that matter. And quickly it became apparent to us that a lot of this had not been joined up, connected, even analyzed. And a lot of that information was generated at a time when nickel prices were $6,000-$7,000, and vanadium wasn't even thought about other than for pure steel work. So we're into a sort of, let's put Kendrick into 2023. I had not worked in the Scandinavian environment before, and so was not aware of the cost structures, and it was immediately apparent to me that we were absentee landlords. We're in actual fact jobbing everything out. Supervision's always there, and it is, you know, it's been the principle of my operations to, in actual fact, use third parties. But this was overkilling third party and underkilling personal, you know, in personal management of the situation. And so the first job was to assemble a team that could actually get stuck into this data, a team that was working out nearer Western Europe, if you like, cost structures than Scandinavian, which can be quite high if you use an external consultant. And that we did, and I would say that we did it very successfully. And one sort of team member now who's part of that reorganization is Martin Churchhouse, and I'm going to do no more than hand over to Martin to tell us all about it, where we stand.
Thank you, Colin. Just very, very briefly, I'll sort of give you a quick sort of summary. We've got projects and licenses, Norway, Sweden, and Finland. Our focus is on nickel, copper, and vanadium. As you mentioned, one of the things that we pride ourselves in, and I think call it an area of expertise that we have, is our ability to take large volumes of historic data and rework it, revisit it, and look at it from a different angle. And that's certainly what we've done for both our nickel projects and our vanadium projects. And again, I think that sort of philosophy is paying dividends. We'll talk about that a little bit later. The last couple of RNSs that you would have seen, or shareholders would have seen, have been in relation to our nickel projects in Norway, central Norway, and in particular at the moment the Esterdalen project, where we have been drilling the Stormyra prospect. We've had three RNSs come out now, consecutive RNSs, with some excellent drill intercept results. We were talking earlier today looking at other nickel projects, exploration resource development projects worldwide, and we've not come up with any projects which have had the same sort of tenor and grade and width of intercepts as we've been achieving. We are particularly excited about that. At some point, I'll get a Dean to give you a bit more detail. But when we first took on the Esterdalen project, what we were looking for, as you know, because it's part of our sort of our DNA, is a mining project that we can get established in the short term. And in the case of the Esterdalen project, we wanted one where we could accumulate a minimum of 50,000 tons of contained nickel, and a project where we could be producing approximately 5,000 tons of contained nickel per annum, which might not sound very much, but, you know, at today's price, which is down considerably from $30,000 a ton at the beginning of the year, it's still $21,000 a ton. There's $100 million turnover on a moderate-sized operation. What's happened is we've done this drilling, and we're certainly of the view that we have the potential, and we will pursue a mining project aimed at 5,000 tons of contained metal per annum. But more importantly, what the work has shown us is that there's significant upside and potential within the license itself. We've spoken in the past, but only briefly, have touched on a number of other projects or prospects that need further work. Stormira itself is connected over a strike length of about 12 kilometers to a number of other targets, which have got some interesting drill results. And I've mentioned a few times in the past, as has Colin, that we've got 10 other targets within the license, each of which has got drill intercepts which hit nickel. We certainly believe that there's more here than meets the eye. We've still got more data that we need to review. In the case of Stormira, we know that we've got a minimum 300 to 500 meters of extension of the strike length, which is confirmed by geophysics. And we were looking at data yesterday, and we think that there could well be up and down dip extensions as well. Mm. And that doesn't take into consideration any of the other prospects that we've got. But I'll leave that for now and allow Adine to give you a bit more information. The other project, which is on our sort of priority list, is the Arioki project, which is our vanadium copper project, which is just inside the Arctic Circle and reasonably close to Kiruna, and a substantial mining district. Also got other projects in sort of central southern Sweden, vanadium projects, and in Finland as well. But Arioki is our priority. There was a substantial amount of historic data available for Arioki. It's taken quite a while to go through that with the assistance of some expertise that was available in Sweden. In the last 9 months, we've done a lot of soil geochem work. We've identified a number of high priority drill targets. We've revisited all the geophysics. And again, we've got further drill targets there where we think we have a very good chance to comfortably double the existing 44 million tons at 1.7 V2O5 resource. The geophysics shows us the same tenor and same signature as that which, you know, resulted in that resource. So that drilling is going to take place as soon as possible. And we've also got some further geochem work that needs to be done. Right now, we're just waiting for the snow melt, at which point Adine can get back on site with her team, do the geochem work, and then go to the various sites where we want to prioritize the drilling and establish whether we can get on site during the summer or whether we have to wait until sort of September time when the ground starts to freeze up again, when we can get rigs back on. But that is our focus and our priority. I think the last time I spoke to you, we actually talked about vanadium and Arioki, and I said that we had a long-term perspective or long-term view on the metal. That was interpreted by some to suggest that meant that we weren't particularly interested. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are very interested and focused on our vanadium projects. We were looking the other day at Trondheim, the city here in Norway, which fairly recently has constructed a 100 megawatt vanadium redox battery storage facility. And we are of the firm view that bulk static storage is a growing market, and, you know, vanadium for a whole host of different technical reasons fits the bill. So we are very, very keen to continue the sort of the vanadium exploration. We also think, as people are now seeing with lithium, nations are having a tendency now to sort of internalize and sort of nationalize their resource, for want of a better word. And they want to see downstreaming, and they want to see product or projects using resources that are part of the sort of the national patrimony. And, you know, we're in a country where bulk static storage is something for the winter months, which is probably an essential going forward. So we're very keen to get that developed and advanced. And we'll continue to look at the other vanadium projects that we've got in the portfolio, as we'll continue to do the same with the other nickel assets that we have in Norway. So, you know, we're now able to do that. We can spread ourselves a little bit thinner because we've got Nadine Backer, who's now our country manager, who has plenty of local expertise and is taking on the day-to-day management of the projects, ably assisted by Vasily Karelas, who's having a sort of an oversight role and providing assistance as and when. Our view on these things, and like Colin touched on it earlier, is that if we want to get the best out of the projects and do the best for the shareholders, then we have to have people working for us who are sensitive to local needs and views and opinions and have empathy because they live here. You know, it's not possible for us to do that unless we have people like Nadine, you know, sort of front and center working on the projects. You know, we're delighted. I mean, we've been in a position now where we've had two meetings with the community, our nickel project at Espadalen, and we've had Nadine standing up talking to 60-odd people, members of the local community, and another 60-odd online and things. And it's well-received, and so it should be, because it just demonstrates that we understand that we need to be working with the community, and the best way for us to do that is to use the local expertise. I think I'm done. I think the best thing now is for me to introduce you to Edine, and she can give you a little bit more of the technical detail on our key projects. Over to you, Edine.
Yeah, so we recently completed a 19-hole drill program for 1,650 meters in total, and we've had some significant intercepts. The majority of the hole intersected mineralization. We've had individual assays with over 8% nickel. One of the recently released results was 11.6 meter, 2.85% nickel, and over 1% copper. So as Martin already mentioned, these are really exceptional results in the current market. We've tested over a bit of a kilometer along strike now, but the geophysics indicate that the mineralization extends for another couple of hundred meters to the southeast, which hasn't been tested. And then it's also open up and down dip. So the next step will be do an in-house resource assessment and then hopefully follow up with some more drilling next winter.
Very good. I was just going to say, ask you a question actually about, it was from the last RNS on the Storm Mirror deposit and the potential there to become a shallow underground operation with minimal surface impact. Is that still, you know, they got the potential for that?
Yeah, as far as we can see, there's certainly the potential for that. Of course, it's going to need a lot more testing to fully define the opportunity there. We're going to do metallurgical testing, maybe some thin section petrography work to define the mineralogy a bit better. But yes, still very much an open opportunity.
I think, Kevin, one of the things that we should mention is where this project works in our favor is that we are, as you say, looking at underground opportunity here. So, you know, we're in an environment where it's possible for us to build an operation that is unobtrusive and, you know, has a minimum surface footprint and you know, we can sort of make sure that everything is done as discreetly as possible. And it helps that it's underground. And with the sort of grades that we're talking about, it means that, you know, we can afford to accommodate some dilution in order to get the sort of mining widths that we will require to be that much more efficient using sort of best available equipment.
In this part of the world, Phil, there's a tendency to actually be very low on labor and very high on capital. And they're the masters of sort of the double, triple bench method of mining, where you take your top lift, bolt it, and then you get far enough forward to start a second lift. And of course, the men are safe because the roof is bolted in front of them. And then when the first and the second have gone far enough, you start a third lift. And again, those guys are safe because the roof is bolted. And then when you create these quite big void, you, instead of putting a whole lot of tailings in what is quite a beautiful countryside, you actually love those tailings will end up going back into the mine as backfill. You know, it's a total circuitry, if you like, the total circuit to address the lowest mining cost, the lowest visual impact, and quite frankly, the best commercial projects. So they're not exclusive one of the missions that we're trying to achieve. And Scandinavia is particularly good at this sort of thing. I mean, there's one mine, I forget where it was, but there was only 22 guys employed producing meaningful tonnages, well above the sort of tonnages we're talking about. So we're in the right place for the equipment and safety. Safety being profoundly important, but if you can actually bolt your top and then bench down, that's the answer to my maiden's prayer.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Me?
Yes, sir.
So I'm an exploration geologist. I have about 10 years of experience, and most of which working in Sweden. I've had positions with Boliden, Mendeley Resources, and also worked for the Geological Survey in Sweden, and then recently started looking more into Norway.
Okay, so you are Swedish.
I am Dutch.
Ah, well, cool. Here we go. We have a Dutch lady, and you worked in Sweden, and so you learned Swedish then?
Yes, exactly. I've lived in Sweden for about 8 years now.
And you can speak Norwegian as well?
Yeah, they're very similar.
Yes.
So it's about 90% of the words are the same. So yeah.
Tell me what's the difference between the obviously being Dutch? What's the difference between the Swedish and Norwegian people compared to the Dutch people?
I would say Dutch people are much more direct and open, and I think the Swedes and the Norwegians are a bit more diplomatic and careful about what they're saying. I think that's okay. The biggest difference.
Yes, we know Dutch are very straightforward and we would say blunt in English. So yeah. how do you find that in terms of dealing with the Swedish and the Norwegian? Because they may not always come up front and tell you what they're thinking.
Yeah, no, exactly. But they do really appreciate when you're honest and open. And then it's just there's a big culture of having discussions and meetings here. So as long as things are discussed, it's okay to disagree. It takes a bit more time before everybody gets on one line, but that is the way that you work here. You just discuss until you come to an agreement.
Yeah. So it's not a case of you can just go ahead and do what you want to do. This does not happen in Scandinavian countries.
No, exactly. So yeah, that's something you have to be aware of, and you have to communicate it in the right way. Yeah.
Yes, it's okay, very democratic society
now. And you know, this sort of worry that people might have about Scandinavia is being ultra environmental. In actual fact, they set the bar, and the rest of the world is catching up. It's no bad thing to do things right and to do things correctly. Yeah. So yeah. That's where we sit. Where we're sitting in a very formalized environment, who knows exactly what to do from that aspect and other aspects as well.
Yeah, pretty right. And also, people are highly educated here, so there's a really good understanding of why we need raw materials, why we need metals, why mining is necessary. Norway is the electric vehicle capital of the world, and by 2025 you cannot buy any petrol cars anymore here. And people are aware of, okay, these cars, they have to be produced somehow, and currently a lot of the metals are coming from countries where the environmental standards are lower. And Norway does have a long mining history historically. Currently the focus is more on the industrial metals, but at the end of the 1800s Norway was the biggest nickel producer in the world. The resources are still there, and they haven't been explored in recent times, really.
So going to this resource with these nickel results, which I have to say from the outside looks sort of shockingly good in terms of the percentage of nickel, etc. I mean, in your experience, how does this project sit?
Yeah, no, I think the results are really, really exceptional. I think both in Sweden and Norway, there are a lot of these very high grade, but maybe smaller tonnage nickel prospects that maybe haven't received enough attention or haven't been of so much interest, because the bigger mining companies have been exploring for these massive high tonnage open pit opportunities. And those just don't work very well here. But there's a lot of high grade opportunities that can be smaller operations, but lower impact and still very profitable.
Yeah, and you talked about the mining style. So it's likely that this will be sort of a sophisticated mechanical mining process. You're not going to have lots and lots of guys sticking their hard hats on and going down under the ground to actually get it. It's more likely to be a technically mechanically mined scenario. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're talking about maybe more expense in CapEx, but significantly less expense in terms of manpower and actually getting the ore out the ground.
Because the likelihood, again, is, you know, subcontractors. We always believe, you know, when I talk about outsourcing, especially when you've got the level of expertise you've got here, and there's a big subcontractor base. So one pays extra on operating costs, but certainly on CapEx, you haven't got to go out and find a small fortune. in order to buy all of your underground mining equipment. It's just not sensible. You buy the company that's got the equipment and you pay a premium on your operating costs. And to me, that's the best way forward. Let the experts do the job who's got the equipment.
Yeah,
a lot of that equipment's produced in Fennoscandia anyway.
Yeah,
because they're used to obviously using it, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, very good. What then is the situation in terms of the potential size of this resource? Do we have any idea what we could be talking about?
I think, as Adine mentioned, I mean, we've got, if we're looking, let's say now at Stormira, which is maybe a kilometer long.
1.2 kilometers.
1.2 k's long. We've got the opportunity maybe for another 300 plus meters of additional strike length there. Over what appears to be a greater up and down dip width than it is if you go further north. We can also clearly see a sort of a void or a vacuum between our recent drilling and the historic drilling, where there's an area where potentially there is down dip extension. We know there's up dip extension, but we need to figure out how high we can go if we're going to have an underground operation before we have to start leaving a crown pillar. So, you know, I think there's a very good opportunity here for us to sort of comfortably double the size of the current area of mineralization, volume of mineralization that's been defined. And then, of course, you know, you've got 12 k's of strike, and you know, Adine might want to elaborate. The Stormira deposit is, in terms of its sort of morphology and sort of genesis, is different to a number of the other target types. So, you know, there's more work that needs to be done on all of those. So we don't know is the honest truth, Kevin, but there is a significant opportunity there.
How deep have we gone so far to find that?
Well, we're only down, our drilling now is only down to, say, 100 meters, something of that order. So we're still very close to surface. Now, there's a lot of sort of dramatic things that have sort of taken place sort of geologically in order for this mineralization to sort of be squeezed into place. And there was some down dip drilling that was done at reasonable depths that didn't intersect any mineralization. But, you know, that was all done in a sort of one sort of fence line along strike. So what we don't know, of course, is if we step back even further, do we then re-engage with mineralization? Because, I mean, you've dealt with other, you know, geologists that you've spoken to in the past on your podcasts and things, and they talk about, you know, mineralization pinching and swelling and things. And this is the same here. And it's quite possible that as you go down dip, that whole line of holes were put in, and they just happen to be put in at a point where everything has been squeezed out. So we now need to go and test deeper as well at some point, because maybe the mineralization sort of reappears. So it is genuinely difficult to say how much more we will get, but it could be very substantial.
Yeah. Okay. It all sounds extremely exciting. And obviously, tell us a little bit more about the vanadium and how we see that progressing in terms of Kendry resources.
Let me get let Adine tell you what she's got planned for her summer campaign, and then I can tell you what I think.
Okay. Yeah. We'll come back to that question. Go for your summer campaign. I hope it's not too many parties, but let's see what you've got.
Yeah, no, but that's regarding Arioki, actually. So we've recently interpreted the soil sampling results from last year's campaign, and we plan to continue that. There's two more licenses that haven't been covered where we see the potential that there is copper and vanadium mineralization as well. So we're going to continue the soil sampling to cover the whole licenses. And then, yeah, we plan to continue drilling the resource there towards the north, where you have a very clear geophysical anomaly. Looks very similar to where the historic drill results are as well. We have to wait there until the snow melts, so we can get on the ground, get a look of what the surface looks like, whether the ground is wet, or if we can actually get a drill rig on there in the summer, or if we have to wait until it starts freezing again.
For me, in terms of where we're going, Kevin, I mean, in fact, just before I say that, I mean, just harking back to you were asking me about the sort of the potential at Espadalen. The other thing to mention, of course, is that there's 12 kilometers of strike where we've got sort of judiciously placed holes that have tested known soil geochem or geophysical anomalies, and then the rest of it remains untested. So it's a significant strike length for us to look at. But talking about Arioki, we're in the middle right now of another test work campaign, which we're doing with Wardell Armstrong. The initial results have come back, and the V205 grades recoveries in line. They actually sent us some press releases for three other operations worldwide, and yeah, which were talking about excellent results or world-class results and so on. And the results that we're currently getting are you know, right in the middle of those. So, you know, we're happy with the best work as far as we've sort of taken it at this stage. And, you know, I think from our point of view, as I said, you know, we see this as a longer term a goal. We want to make sure that we're constantly and continuously sort of building the resource. You know, I'd like to be talking to you in 6 months time or whatever it happens to be, saying that we've now doubled the resource and telling you how much it's cost us, you know, US dollar per ton to do so. And I think, you know, it'll be a pleasantly small number that we'll be able to do it. And then to say that we're now on to phase three, where we're now sort of continuing to look at the next extensions and drill targets that are going to come out of the work that Adine is going to be doing in the next few months with her geochem. You know, we've also got copper targets, which we need to explore in more detail. We don't know whether that is a byproduct or whether that's something completely separate. That remains to be seen. And then, you know, we do have the other vanadium licenses that we have in sort of central Sweden and, of course, in Finland. And one of the things we want to do now is to, I'm not sure commercialize is the right word at this stage, but what we want to do is we now want to start talking and building a relationship with the people that will take our product and do something with it. So we want to go and talk to people in Trondheim and just understand, you know, what was the rationale behind putting in the vanadium redox plant. And we want to talk to other groups in sort of Fenno Scandia that are in the battery business and see if we can align ourselves with them so that we can be at some point in the future, we can be a first point of contact and somebody wants a secured or assured supply of high quality vanadium concentrate they can use for production purposes.
Yeah, just following up on that, Kevin, well, in our prospectus, we made the very bold statement that we had a first class boss, probably the best in the globe concentrate. Now, that's one enormous statement to make in a prospectus. So obviously we went through due care and diligence before we made that statement, but it remains true. And we're also investigating, if you've got such a super duper concentrate, why on earth do you stop there? Why do you take someone else take the benefit of this extremely low titanium material and et cetera, et cetera? And so we're looking at electrolytes. And I think I mentioned on other podcasts is the fact that the dynamics of our industry are changing in general, is that we've got end user is, of course, bothered about price, worried about price. But the biggest worry in a lot of these new age metals, let's call them new age metals, is the stability of supply. And so don't let's go for a trader who essentially places an order, gets a delivery, takes his turn. What they want to know is that when they enter in, you know, into a design, into a vehicle, into a storage battery, that they've got the underlying raw materials to make those things for. It's a sustainable business. And so what we're seeing now, in actual fact, is the end user coming to us. And it seems rather a shame. And this is in the space of a year, so we, you know, and it's very dynamic, this world of ours. It seems a shame to be selling somebody pretty high grade, well, one of the best concentrates in the world, them to take the value add advantage. And so we're really looking at the incremental capital, the incremental cost, the overall NPV of producing electrolyte and getting into bed with others. And I think, you know, when you get into these specialty metals, it's no bad thing to form your liaisons earlier than later. It's not as though you're making a copper concentrate we can send anywhere around the world. It's not as though you're into the rare earth industry where refiner and rare earth producer work close. It's essentially, we're in the core of Europe. This vanadium position was carefully selected, and we feel that the actual combination of position, extremely high quality concentrate, the ability to take it into electrolyte, we may be, and we think we are, extremely well placed, and we'll be giving some very good news to our shareholders in the not too distant future. And as Adine was saying, that technically we don't feel over challenged, quite frankly, because the geophysics is pretty good and we know where we're drilling. And the copper has just gone from left side, total surprise. We're not putting any value on it, but what a joy to have a large copper anomaly, which may figure or may not figure, but we're not holding our breaths, but it's nice. Nice to have.
So it sounds from what all of you are saying is you're not fishing in a pond with no fish then, either. There are fish in this pond, and by that obviously I mean the metal.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, I saw a phrase the other day, just sort of going back to what Colin's just said, I saw a phrase the other day, people talking about lithium supply anxiety. You know, we do see and we do anticipate vanadium having its day, and therefore we want to make sure that we're aligned and we're producing the right product at the end of the day, and that we're aligned with those people that want that product so that, you know, they're not going to suffer a similar fate. And, you know, we've got the resources to do it. And it's now just a case of making sure that we keep the momentum going, and got sort of different aspirations for the nickel project, which is just virtue of its size and morphology and everything. You know, every nickel is nickel, but, you know, the vanadium is different. And we just need to make sure we're in the right space with the right product.
But I think you could end up having nickel anxiety as well. There's a huge amount of nickel required for these batteries. It's huge.
New terminology. You've got range anxiety. Now we've got nickel and lithium anxiety as well, and vanadium.
Yeah. No, and that also means that the political time is right for it. I mean, politicians realize this as well. And I think in Europe, there's a big focus on increasing the supply from local sources. Maybe you've seen that the EU is releasing their Critical Raw Materials Act, where they want to increase European production for these critical metals to 10%. They want to decrease permitting times for opening a mine to 2 years. We have to see how it all works out, but the ambitions and the will is there. And I think both the Norwegian and the Swedish governments also understand this, and they're very excited to see more mining opportunities in their countries.
Yeah, I mean, most of the world's production of nickel comes from Russia, or what was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic before that. And obviously, the world has suddenly realized, oops, we haven't got our own nickel. We might not have access to this nickel. What are we going to do?
Yeah, Norilsk was old 50 years ago in Russia, and I don't think things have got any. I mean, and people talk about Norilsk being a palladium mine, but that's one thing. But in actual fact, it was their key source of nickel. So post this war, nobody knows what shape that operation is in. So you're absolutely right, Kevin, that new nickel, well, not new nickel, Norway's got a long history of nickel.
Yeah, I mean, you have the nickel refinery in Kristiansand as well, which is currently mainly taking ore from Canada, but... it would be great if that can be,
That was one of my questions as well. Is once this nickel's out the ground, is the processing facilities either close by or in Norway to process this the ore?
Yeah, so one of the biggest nickel refineries in the world is in Norway. It's in Kristiansand. It's currently operated by Glencore.
And how far away is that from the mining sites that we're talking about?
Couple of hundred kilometers, I guess.
Okay, so to truck that, it would not be a big deal then in terms of Norway.
No, and infrastructure is really great here, and even you can drive to within 2 kilometers of the Stormyra deposit currently already. So you don't need to develop a lot of infrastructure.
Well, you are on the Sunday roast, and traditionally in the UK we have a Sunday roast dinner. So we have to ask you the question. We've asked the boys before because they've been on the roast a few times. What would be your favorite Sunday roast?
I'd think that would be Norwegian salmon.
Oh, okay. I don't think we've had salmon before. Very good. Norwegian salmon on the barbecue at 11 o'clock at night on a summer evening. Yeah. Very good.
Is that like the gravel? Is it the Gravelax stuff with its that sort of really fermented in the ground for ages?
Oh yeah, no, that's a bit too strong for my taste. No, the fresh salmon,
fresh sea caught salmon, and then slap it on the barbecue. Anyway, very good, guys. It's been a pleasure speaking to you all, and I mean, I think that gives everybody a very good overview of Kendrick. I'll ask you one question there, both Colin and Martin. With a market cap of £2 to £3 million, how much value do you think is currently in Kendrick in this metals area?
I think that answer basically, as I go along life waves, is a moving feast. And I try not to answer it because, you know, it's easy to get depressed. And we know the quality of our assets. We know the marketplace we're in. We know the need for these new age metals. We know that we're in Europe in the of it all. So the market cap bears no relationship whatsoever to the asset base that we've built. And really, second guessing market cap. And I just do the old comment I've done many, many times. When I first got into this junior mining company business out of sort of operational mining, I spent a lot of time in my in Canada. And for the life of me, I couldn't find a stock less than $1.25. I thought, this is a nice business. 6 months later, I couldn't find one over 25 cents. And as a bit of a sprog, I couldn't figure out what had happened. And of course, nothing had happened except the project for 6 more months more valuable than they were. But the world had fell asleep or got despondent about the fortunes of small-scale mining, smaller companies, venture capital markets, not to confine to natural resource. And so, you know, we've been in that phase now, as I've said, for the longest period in my entire history. So really, it's a question I don't even want to answer, Kevin, because we're doing our level best. But when the market turns, which it will, the re-rating will be at the top end of the re-rate. And the fact that we probably will be starting from a lowly platform matters not. Of course, reality is reality. I don't know what you'd like to say to that, Martin.
Yeah, I'd come at it from a slightly different angle and say that there are probably not many companies that are happy with their market cap over the last sort of year or two for, you know, various reasons, as Colin said. But from my point of view, I'm more concerned at this stage in making sure that we spend our treasury wisely, and that I'm talking to you in a few months' time telling you that we've increased our nickel resource by X and our vanadium resource by Y, and that it's cost us X dollars per ton to do so. And you can see that it's all, you know, shareholders can see that it's money well spent.
That's something we can control, Kevin.
Yeah.
I think when you get in times like this, it's better that management gets the reds down and controls and looks at things they can control. I think if you're working for share price, and looking at your share price 10 times a day, the net result is basically zero. I think if you're looking at how can you add value, how can you actually position your shareholders to be the best of the bunch, that's our job.
Yeah. No, I mean, really, I'm just pulling attention or calling attention to the current mismatch in terms of the resources that are on the ground or in the ground, and how the company is being valued. So we will see as time goes by, as you say, as these things are updated, what the situation is. But it's been a pleasure speaking to you all, and we look forward to speaking to you shortly again in terms of going forward with what's happening with Kendrick in Scandinavia.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks very much.
So the week that was, the ones certainly that the shaker this week was PREM, which is Premier African Minerals, down 25% on the week. They issued an update on their Zulu lithium project. They said the process plant is fully operational but requires modifications to achieve full capacity, with output expected to rise gradually month on month to reach 4,471 tons in December. The CEO, George Roach, said he was frustrated with the timeline for getting Zulu to full production. So that one, I mean, that one's done unbelievably well, hasn't it, in the last sort of 6 to 8 months, probably actually more like a year, actually. It's gone from like, you know, sub 0.1p up to the 0.5, 0.6, and I think it went as high as like 0.7, 0.8 at one point, and it has dropped back a bit recently. As I say, it's down 25%, but that's done like 25, 30% on the original investment. So it's been remarkable, obviously, lithium play.
25-30% or 25-30 bags?
Not this week. It's down 25 on the week. But if you look at it from about a year, 12 to 18 month perspective, it's gone from sub 0.1 pence, like 0.005 or 0.05, up to 0.5, 0.6, 0.7 pence.
So it's done 10 bags, basically.
And I think more, because I think at one point it was like 0.03 or zero, you know, like when it started off. If you look back the 2 year historical, it's done very well. So a lot of people have done very well off prem.
And this is what's going to happen. I predict this is what's going to happen in a lot of these small market cap resource companies. It's going to happen. I can see it happening in Galileo Resources. I can see it happening in African Pioneer. I can see it happening in Extract. I can see it happening in Green Ore, is it? I can see it happening in, is it Alba that kicked out Green Ore?
Oh, yeah, Green Rock Minerals, which is the...
Green Rock Minerals, sorry, yeah. So, I mean, I named just a few, but there are a lot of them that if they hit the target, as in production of lithium or production of gold or production of copper, Conroy Gold is another one, you know, all of those small caps, they're going to 10 back.
in my view, all of them, as long as they hit what they think they're going to hit. And I think the proof is there with the vast majority of them. It's a bizarre situation now that we're really just waiting for absolute 100% proof before people believe it.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah.
The other one this week, I think this was actually the top performer for 5 days, was Vasari and VRS. We mentioned them briefly a few weeks ago. But 178% on the week. But for many long-term holders, obviously, this won't make too much of a difference because they've dropped so much from that probably 90% down from the highs. But those who managed an entry at the bottom in the last week or two, well done. They had an announcement this week that drove them up, as I say, 178 on the week. Top movers on AIM, they released positive updates from a trial of their water-based graphene admixture called Cementine. Tests with Banagher precast concrete found that 20% of ordinary Portland cement can be removed from their typical precast concrete mix with Visarian's graphene admixture is added while maintaining the same strength. Using Cementine across Banagher's output, it is thought to avoid 4.4 million kilograms of carbon dioxide emissions annually. So move well on that news. Is it finally turning itself around? Well, I guess that's yet to be seen, but we'll find out over the coming months, I guess.
Yeah, seems to be coming something. It wasn't at the same time, but there you go. Sometimes these
talk about Contango this week. Go on, go for it. What do you think about their producing wash coking coal?
Yeah, it's great. They're producing wash coking coal. There's going to be sales, it said, in June, I think, in the RNS. And it didn't move. Why?
Oh, well, that's a surprise.
You know, why? I mean, it's going to be revenue producing now in the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Strange situation, but one that we shouldn't be shocked at anymore because it seems to happen across the board with a lot of these companies, not just Contango. I mean, Ben's Creek's in a similar situation as well, but now going up to the full production on two highwall miners by the end of June. Problem there, which Contango doesn't have, is that there isn't much of a margin left with Ben's Creek because the market of metallurgical coal has really taken a hit in the last few months, whereas Contango have a gate fee, $120, and it cost them, I think, less than $20, $30 to produce the coal. So there is a margin there, and a good margin. I don't know exactly what the margin is going to be by the time they take all the costs in, but...
They've not mentioned margins, but obviously they've announced that they're going to sell all the produced coal at the factory gate price of $120 per ton. And as you mentioned, they anticipate announcing the first sales in June of 2023. Obviously, I'm alluding to Contango now.
Yeah, so I mean, Contango is a head scratcher, really. Why wasn't it up 30, 40, 50% at least? You know, it's still under the 6p. price that they raised the money to mean that they don't need any more money.
Yeah.
Lots of potential of growth going forward. I mean, again, it comes back to the point, doesn't it? Maybe people just want 100% proof that, you know, the cash is in their bank from the first sale before the jives to jump on. So we will see.
I think that one's due a re-rate for sure at some point. It will happen. It's looking good there. So yeah, good news on that production. I mean, you've talked bargain of the weeks in the past, and you mentioned, I think, African Pioneer last week, didn't you? Yours, which hasn't really done much. I mean, you know, it's the potential still there for sure. What about this week's bargain of the week? What are we going to go for? I know last week we had on Acuity Risk Management CFO or COO, sorry, Chief Operations Officer Kerry Chambers. That company looks primed again. I know there's a lot of talk online. There's a lot of tweets going out there, and we got some nice feedback from the Sunday Roast last week. What do you make of that company? And I think they announced the final results the beginning of last week, but certainly looks primed to go, doesn't it? With a nice suite of customers there on board, and the revenues, the forward looking revenues look good, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, if you go on the forward looking revenues, then it's seriously undervalued at the current market cap. And I think you're going to see lots and lots of new stuff coming through because, you know, the sales team, if you like, have taken over now. So they've extended the length of the contracts. They're getting new customers. They're having tie-ups with all sorts of people, as we discussed last week on the roast. So, yeah, I think valuation-wise in this sector, this is like very, very under the radar at this moment in time. And that's probably because it's gone from drums to Acuity and people don't really get it yet. But I think when they do, I think you'd be talking multiples of the current market cap. That's my view.
since Kerry's come on, she's been focused on the getting new partnerships and sales channels in there for their Stream Integrate, which is their integrated risk management software, isn't it? So all it needs is more, and they build more and more of these partners into different regions. Obviously, they focus on North America, they're focusing into Europe, and it just needs to build on top of that. And I really like this at the moment, because this cyber security risk, there's so much risk out there. You hear about all these ransomware attacks on large companies, even happens for football clubs like Manchester, you know, any other clubs. And I know Manchester United were hacked recently, and with that ransomware demand. So I really like the company and the whole the GRC type side of things. So for me, that's the bargain of the week. It's massively under the radar. People need to listen to that roast from last week with Kerry on, because she spoke very, very well. So I think this one has got real potential to move.
Yeah. Well, let's wait and see what happens. Seems to move too fast, does it really?
Now, let's talk about TechMins then. Obviously, as part of our road trip this week, we managed to call in at the LIBAT site. What did you make of it? I mean, obviously, good progress there.
Yeah, well, it's working, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
It's working. You know, I mean, basically, he showed us he couldn't actually recycle a battery while we were there. Okay, it wasn't possible because it would affect the EA thing. But he threw a couple of cardboard boxes on it, sent it up, went into the machine, comes out the other side. And then on the other side, he showed us the stuff that does come out.
Yeah.
And it goes on up the conveyor belt, takes the metal on board.
Yeah, so the magnets come on, don't they? They bring up the iron, the ferrous oxide, and then it basically separates that, which drops down into a container. And then you've got your black mass, which is on like a copper plate, isn't it? Which is the anode and the cathode. And you scrape your finger across this black mass, and it's like a powder form, and that's your lithium, your nickel sulfide, your cobalt, etc.
Yeah, we can say to shareholders that it's there and it's working. Okay, so the suppress system, or whatever it's called,
the fire suppression system,
has to be still okayed and fitted, but that is not now going to delay when they're going to produce. As it's been said before, 3 to 4 weeks. I think that machine's going to be switched on. And there's supposed to be some sort of investor.
There is a press day organized, I believe, which is sometime
at the beginning of July.
Yeah. So I think basically that there's a couple of conditions that need to be met related to the actual functioning of the site in terms of the fire suppression and the way that the air effectively, you know, basically purity of the air. So filtration system is what I'm looking for. So that'll all be done, and let's say hope that, as you say, within the next 3 weeks to a month, it's turned on.
Yeah, and I mean, basically from the last time we went in, what was it, November to now, we saw, you know, all the equipment. It was there, but it wasn't ready to function. Now it's the loading bays that they've set out with the big blocks to keep the lithium batteries safe until they get recycled, has now been developed. So there's like 7 or 8 big loading bays that they can put, I think, 100 tons into. And then it's moved into the first shed, which then loads the machine. And then the machine then goes through the process of recycling these. I think he said there was 5 or 6 different bits, wasn't it?
Is this in the shed where you've got what we call the pig pens, where you've got your firewall between each one of the beds? And then it's like a first in, first out system, isn't it?
Yeah. But then the scenario then was that you're going to get electrolytes, which is the thing that they're not sure, you know, who's going to buy or what's going to happen. Then they've got the metal that they will get from the thing. Then they have the black mass. Then they will have plastic and paper and copper, I think. And I think that's it. I don't know, maybe I'm missing one. But obviously the important one is the metals and the black mass. These are the things that are going to be of value. And I think they're being approached all the time for off-takers. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be an issue with an off-taker. To quote Alex, it's basically we want an off-taker with some add-ons so that we can accelerate our business. So yeah, it was good. We took with us the new large investor, Jonathan Swan, to see it. So he can see where he put his money, and he was very impressed. I think he was
great.
He could see how good it was. So
thanks.
So all in all, it was good.
Alex and Nick for showing us around, and Steve as well. They looked after us, so it was very good.
Yeah.
On Joe as well. Good mention to Joe at Recyclers. So
shout out to Jonathan for the Cabriolet Mini that we rallied up there in
the lime green
Cabriolet Mini. Happy days.
Good. Right. Well, let's move on, because I set a competition at the beginning of last week in the Chill Telegram group, stating that the person who predicted the closing trading price, or the final trade at the end of the week on Friday, will be sent a nice vape. And we can reveal that the price was actually 13.18 pence. I'm going off level two at 16.40. So no arguments. That was the final trade, which is nothing short of incredible. And it's up 45% on the week, the share price. So there were two entries which were very close, as in very close to that final figure. In fact, the entries that came in that were two were identical share prices, right? We had Lloyd at 12.75 pence. And Emma Morrissey also at 12.75 pence. Now, based on the fact that I sent two vapes out to Lloyd for him to review, then we have to hand it to Emma, okay? So well done, Emma, on winning that one. Email us your address and we will get it out to you next week. Before we do that, I want you to listen.
And we're not sending it to the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, exactly. We're not sending it to Emma in the Dominican. So I want you to just listen to this, because this is, for me, is absolutely genius. This is Lloyd reviewing the vapes. Have a listen.
Afternoon, guys. This is my moment, the Chill Zero review. We've got the Lemon Chill Zero from the USA. I believe the UK ones will be different. Here we go. Very nice. Very nice indeed.
I was just, when he sent that on the group, I was just smiling all that. I think I played it about 15 times.
You see his face. He's like the cat that got the cream. Because I think this week, you all know what he holds anyway. He's become a chillionaire. So well done, Lloyd, for becoming a chillionaire in terms of actual value of what you hold. Fantastic. You took the bull by the horns and went for it. And it's paid off. And I think we'll continue to pay off. I think it's had a great week. But the reality of the situation is, I think everybody's suddenly realized it's going to make a lot of money, you know, and I don't think it's going to stop here. I really don't. I think it's had a good day on Friday. I think Friday was most of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I can see it after the weekend, everybody's starting to think based on potential of revenue and potential of profit for the US, UK, Middle East, not even talking about the rest of the world yet, or Europe. But those three, plus what they could generate in Chill. I was going through some figures myself, basically because Lloyd was asking me what I thought it would be worth by the end of the year. And I was going through fundamental figures to say, this is what we would need to do.
Yeah.
And
got a long way to go, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. The rise has been nothing short of fantastic, as I alluded to. But obviously, what we need to see now is some real revenue numbers on the, you know, let's hope that they get this vaping group. RNS was fantastic, but let's hope he gets the distribution deals and he can get those vapes out into the market. That's the key now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, Eric Schrader posted the places that they put them in Arizona, or one of the places in Arizona had completely sold out already. And had a bunch of people banging on the door looking for more. So I think the product is actually going to speak for itself, because the flavors are excellent. And, you know, Lloyd's maybe been slightly biased, but they're good to hold. You know, I think the vapors are going to like them. And certainly in the UK, the bigger version of them, I think, is going to be a smash hit. That's my view on it.
Yeah.
And if that becomes a smash hit, then 13 pence is a bargain in terms of the share price still. Now, obviously, I was saying that at 2p. So, but the interesting thing is that Chill is now the best performing stock on the whole of the LSE. Okay, the whole of the UK stock market is basically the highest producing or highest return from 2p to 13.05p. Now, often people think, oh, maybe it's done too much. But I think all of this so far has just been a bit of catch up in terms of.
What are we talking about since January, or what figures are you using there?
Yeah, since January.
Okay.
Since January. Now, I didn't check that out, but that's what it was quoted as.
Okay.
On something else I was listening to, or reading, I should say.
Okay, well, I mean, moving on, I think we've done a few stocks there. We've got a big day today with all the final games of the Premier League. Well done, United, on getting a Champions League spot next season. D-Day for the big three. Will it be Everton? Will it be Leeds? Or will it be Leicester? What are your thoughts? Give us your prediction. I know who I...
Well, it's going to be two of the three that go down. So who's going to be safe? I have to think that, you know, the odds are that the atmosphere at Goodison is going to be
like
electric,
serious.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether that's a nervous atmosphere or a we're going to win and sort our safety out, I don't know. Yeah,
I would love to be at that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine the atmosphere would be absolutely electric? Because Bournemouth, there's no easy game in the Premiership as we alluded, but Bournemouth are no pushover as well. So Everton are going to have to be on it.
Yep, they're going to have to be on it. And I mean, a draw could keep them up as well based on the other results as well. So, I mean, they could lose. All of them could lose in Halas. It stays as it is. So Leeds are playing Tottenham Hotspur, who have just been basically falling apart. I'm not even sure they're going to get any sort of European place now. Haven't been in the top four. West Ham have done what they're going to do. I actually think West Ham are going to rest most of their players because they've got the European Cup or European Conference Final, haven't they?
We were talking about this, weren't we, in the car. I said, yeah, you looked up the figures, I think, on your phone, and we were saying who out of those three teams has been in the Premiership for the longest or been in the top flight. Obviously, Premiership has only been around for 25 years. So, and you came up with it, and obviously the article was a bit old, but by a long way, Everton were way up there as the oldest club, weren't they?
Yeah, Everton have been in the Premier. Well, no, Arsenal is still the longest serving one. But Everton have been in division longer than anybody else, I think. And then it goes Arsenal, Everton, Liverpool for the longest without being relegated. So yeah, it would be a shame for Everton to go down. I don't really want.
For me, Everton will stay up out of those three. But again, anything can happen. But that's where I'd put my money on now out of all of them.
I can see Leicester beating West Ham, right? And if Leicester beat West Ham, then Everton have to win to stay up.
Yeah.
Because Leicester will stay up on points and goal difference if Everton only draw. So we will see.
18 times, good. Anything else you want to discuss? But I think we've done it there, haven't we? We've gone on a bit. And what I'll say is we've got some exciting podcasts lined up. We've obviously done some, let's say, audio diaries of our visit this week, which will all be revealed in the coming days and obviously on to next week's row. So just want to say thanks for listening and we'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah, looking forward to sharing all these different things with you for different companies that we were looking at over the last week. And good luck.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.